1 and 5, 15. That's the episode run, Andy. I'd make a good bingo caller, wouldn't I?
You'd make a great bingo caller. I reckon that's something you've done in a past life. Definitely, I could have seen you at the bingo.
One of the things I haven't done, actually, surprisingly, and when you think about the amount of jobs I do these days, I might as well do that as well, and I've just got the full repertoire.
Well, you never made it to round 15 of when you were wrestling, I bet.
Round 50? Have you ever watched wrestling before?
No, I haven't, mate. No, I'm sure you do. Yeah. Is it like five rounds, is it, or something?
That's boxing you're thinking of.
Oh, sorry. How many? What's wrestling then? Anyway, welcome to the Darts Podcast, everyone. Mission Darts is me and Matt going off on a tangent about wrestling that I clearly know nothing about. All I remember is watching Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks. Anybody else remember them? So it's nice to see you again. I'm feeling fit and fresh after my pneumonia last week. I'm back to my, I won't say I'm back to my A game, but I'm not far off. So that's good. But by the time
I've got to jump in there.
Oh, go on.
You said back to the A game.
Yes.
Someone feels like they're nearly at their A game.
Well, you were saying last week after practicing with Mr. Searle.
Oh,
he said you,
The physios were, I'm putting hours in. On Saturday, I practiced for 3.5 hours. That's unheard of for me. And literally, before we come on to record this, I've been practicing again. I can't miss. So hopefully this transfers into a game. A right, game, so you've got come on.
Two weeks now to keep this going, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know, or to keep it going and keep it going up a level, you know, keep getting better to the point where I haven't had that feeling very many times, but I know exactly what you're saying when you literally stand at the board and think, whatever I look at is going in. I know it, and it's the best feeling in the world. It's almost like that. It's like you're the most focused, but you're the most relaxed at the same time. And it's a fabulous feeling.
It's like an out-of-body experience, isn't it? It's like, it's hard to describe, but
I'm buzzing for you. I'm buzzing for you, Matt. But as this goes out, I'm playing bloody Super League for the first time in 2 years. And I guarantee that they aren't going to be going where I want them to go.
People will listen to this podcast on Sunday and then be like, oh, let's go on to like Darts for Windows and see how Andy's getting on.
Oh, I found out we're away as well. I don't know what it's on these days. I think we're playing Wigan or something away. So it's not even a good draw. It's like not even a home venue that I at least know a little bit. It's like going back into the unknown. I'm getting picked up in the morning, get there. Oh, I don't know how I get myself into these things. I don't know. I think easy to go and play chess, and I don't even really play chess. So anyway, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. What's the worst thing that can happen? I lose 4-0.
You soil yourself.
I average 50. Yeah. I don't get to the toilet in time, but I'm still alive. So it's all good. You'll still have me next week for episode 60. So how have you been?
Well, do you know what? You normally pose questions to me.
Oh,
and before we came on, you went, Matt, have you got a question for me this week? And
Hang on a minute. Before we came on, we had technical difficulties again. Right, go on, carry on. Before we came on.
Oh, by the way, I've also, before we get into that, I've actually been online and found a picture of your Super League team as well.
Oh, here we go.
And in honour of you, Andy, I've got it here right for you.
Oh, God.
And I've made a poster of it.
Oh, very good, yeah.
Yeah, made a poster of it. Yeah. For anyone listening, there's three donkeys sat behind me. So, anyway, I've got a question. Let's start hitting hard early with the darts questions. Join in the comment section. I've got, what is a darts major? A word used on social media, a word used quite regularly when describing darts tournaments. What do you class as a darts major? Because I thought I knew the answer to this, and I've changed my mind.
Okay, and I used to have a different answer to what I'm going to give you now. So when you first say that to me, what is a darts major? Mine is, and this might be controversial, mine is a televised event, either by Sky, ITV, you know, one of the major broadcasters, so linear not a YouTube. TV. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That you have had to qualify for. So it's not invitational. So I don't class the Premier League as a major. I don't class the, what was in January, is it the Masters? Excuse me. I don't class that as a major. The World Series, I don't class that as a major. So I don't know whether I can reel them off, but it would be UK Open. Oh, I don't class the World Cup, obviously, because it's a team event. UK Open, World Match Play, Players' Champs, Euro Champs, World Champs, and I'm missing one other.
Okay.
Grand Slam. God, how could I forget that?
I've kind of changing my mind, and I'll tell you why. I know that the PDC don't use the term major. That's not in their vocabulary. Major's used amongst people like ourselves who sit and talk about events, which is where the blurred lines are, because there is no meaning behind it. It's all personal. My personal view of this has changed even further. If you're talking about a major, major being the word that was used for the big, big top events, I think there's two now. World Championships and the World Match Play. The reason being, what opened my eyes to this, Mickey Mansell sat inside the world's top 64. If he won the Grand Slam of Darts, would not have been in the world's top 32. How can you say he's a major champion who's not even in the top 32 of the world?
Well,
but started in the top 64.
Yeah, I'll have to disagree with you there. I think you can do that. There's been plenty of two off the top of my head. Emma Raducanu, British woman, won the Women's US Open, one of the four majors in tennis, and was ranked nowhere, like 100 and something. She was a nobody and won it. Famously, has been players win golf's majors, and there's only four of them. When John Daly did it, when he was ranked 500 and something in the world. So if it can happen at other sports, I don't see any reason why it can't happen at darts. That's just my take.
I'm going to go on to an example here. So I'm looking at the rankings. Gabriel Clemens is in the world's top 32 right now. And he's not even won a pro tour. How do you have someone who's not even on the pro tour in the top 32, but someone who's won a major outside the top 32?
Okay, so this is more you're arguing with the ranking system rather than the majors, which was the question. I think this is another debate. Are we arguing that the ranking system's wrong?
No, I'm arguing that the winner's check isn't heavy enough to make a significant impact on the rankings.
It would be. But the darts is a 2-year rankings. A lot of other sports, it's 1 year. So that's the difference. So, to me, that feels like if I'm going to argue to be on your side, which, you know, I'm not going to do that, am I? Let's be honest. But if I was, it would have to be, we've got to change the ranking to 1 year, because you're right. It's funny you've mentioned Mickey Mansell, because the first thing I did this morning was look at the, you know, disclaimer. We're filming this the day after the Grand Slam final, the Monday. But Mickey Mansell hasn't qualified for the Players, which will be the finals will be on as this is going out live. And I was like, oh my, like, that's blown my mind. Speaking to people today going, oh, Mickey Mansell, God, didn't he play well? Yeah. Guess what? You won't be seeing him next week because he hasn't qualified. He's like 80-something on the rankings for the Players. Should he have got, you know, should there be spaces for somebody to get? I don't know. This feels like a big topic of conversation, Matt, for us, where we could both get on our high horses about the ranking system. But I don't agree there's only two.
For me, the number 64 position at the moment is £68,000. If you're in the top 64 and you win a TV ranking title, a major, you should be in the top 32. So for me, the minimum payout to the champion should be £200,000 for it to be classed as a major, because that is anyone in the top 64 wins it, you're in the world's top 32. You could have had Mickey Mansell as a major winner who isn't seeded for the World Championships. You could have had a situation where if he didn't get in the Pro Tour, you could have had Mickey Mantle not in the World Championships as a major winner. He could have not been in, because if he didn't get in the top 32 and he wasn't in the Pro Tour, like, he wins that title, he can't get in the top 32 of the world. He'd be in the PDPA qualifier.
Is he in the World Championship?
Just, I believe. I think he... Hang on, let me just check so we can get this bang on. I believe he just squeaked in. Yeah, he came in 31st position by £750. You know, had he not got... Had he lost one extra game and not been in the World Championships, that win would not have put him in the Worlds via the main ranking. So, order of merit.
Playing devil's advocate then, in what you're saying, somebody could play appalling all year. They don't win a single game. They lose every single game. They're an appalling year. And then for whatever reason, they have one good week or even one good weekend. And they go from 64th in the world to top 32. Is that right? Should you jump over 32 other players that are maybe playing some good darts just because you've had a good weekend?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, they'd already have to have 68 on their ranking. So I don't think that would have been possible unless they had 68 one year and it was like the very last tournament of year two. That's the only way it could possibly happen that way. So would it even... Yeah, that would have to be the case. You'd have to add 68 on year one, and then you'd have to win the Grand Slam. That's the only, or the Players' Championship Finals. That's the only way it could happen. It couldn't happen that way because they couldn't have gotten the Players' Championship Finals. So the only way that scenario could happen is you have 68 grand one year, and then year two, you lose every game, then you win. No, it wouldn't even do that. It can't even do that because you've got the UK Open. It's not a possible scenario. Because the UK Open, you'd be guaranteed money for being in the top 64. So
yeah, but only small amounts of money. But yeah, touching on it very briefly, I don't agree with the 2-year system. I think that's nonsense. The amount of times something's come around and I've gone, why is his ranking dropped? Oh, because 2 years ago he got to the final. Oh, really? I'd forgotten all about that.
Michael Smith.
About
world number 18 as it stands.
Oh, I've seen the rankings. Like Nathan's dropped way down. And,
Peter Wright's out 16.
We should really just be talking about the mission players because they're all heading in the right direction. Oh. They're going bonkers. Richie Edhouse is now a seed for the Worlds.
Number 29.
Yeah, phenomenal. Ryan Joyce is up there. Martin's now 34. Up there. You've got Connor heading in the right direction. You've got Wessel heading in the right direction. And I still think he's going to do something crazy in either the Players or the Worlds. We shall see.
Suter, you know, 49.
Yeah. Yeah. Weirdly, Alan's now going in the wrong direction again after winning a Pro Tour. But that Pro Tour only got him in. Well, it would have got him in the Players.
He's in the Worlds as well. Yeah. So he's got a chance back end of the year. Yeah.
He's got a chance. So it's great to see for Mission Players and nicely linked on there to the fact that Martin Lutman, finalist against, and do you know what? One of the best interviews I've ever watched. And that's not because he's a Mission Player, not because he's a mate. Listening to Martin talk after the Worlds, the amount of respect he showed for Luke Littler and for what he's doing, and basically holding his hands up. You're like literally going, you know, what could I do? And he was positive. He was going into it, you know, not saying I'm going to win it because I'm the best, but just saying, the way he was talking was great. His attitude was great. I thought he played great. And then his interview afterwards was so humble. It was so, you could tell he was so delighted that he'd got there. And how many times do we talk about, we see players that have got beat and it's the end of the world? It's like their world has ended because they lost in the final. Hang on a minute, mate. He'd won, what was it, 7 or 8 games? No, it was more than that because he'd 4 qualifying games to get there.
Six on the thing, weren't it? Last 16 quarter semis and then 3 group stages.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. So fair play to him. Good luck to him and his family. Brilliant to see. I hope he follows it up. I hope as we speak, he's following it up. In fact, I have the draw in front of me. Who's
got Connor Scott?
He's got Connors. Of course he has. Right.
Green stage.
Yeah, yeah.
That shows respect. When you look at some of those guys who got put on stage two, I mean, that could be a nice little talk in there for you, because there's some games there where you think, ooh, how is that on stage two? Yeah.
Menzies, Wood, Jim Williams. Yeah. Van Dijsselbloem, Callum Ridds. Yeah. Oh, Wessel Nyman, Kim Ibrex.
That's the one that I think they're going to move, to be honest. I wouldn't be surprised to see that move.
Yeah, if they've tended to do that, haven't they? If the main stage has got finished or whatever. Yeah, some big, big names on stage too, isn't there? It really is. Tell you what, that'll be a fast game. Josh Rock and Ricky Evans. Whew.
But do you know what? I wish that was on the main stage as well, because that's one I'd like to... I like watching those really sort of fast-paced games. Michael Smith, Dom Taylor, I thought was interesting, because Michael Smith, obviously a big name within the game, but Dom Taylor's got the ability that he could beat him. Barneveld's an interesting one, because he could get jumped and knocked out of the seedings for the World Championships as well. So,
yeah, I noticed he was the one that on the way down after this week, yeah. It's a big event, isn't it, the Grand Slam? You know, again, this is the rolling system that we're talking about. If you did something 2 years ago, now you're defending it. And yeah, and if you've gone out of form since then and now, it can be a big old chunk coming off your ranking, that.
Well, take a look at that one. We'll see how well this ages. Just pick out two potential surprises. I think Thibaut Tracol could be an interesting one against Gerwyn Price. I don't think Peter Wright beating Daryl Gurney would be considered a surprise.
On current form, it might be, but...
So I'll go Daryl Gurney beating Peter Wright, if I can get away with that.
Okay.
We'll see who ages better.
These are all best of 11s, aren't they?
Yeah.
Where is it? Is it usual? Is it Minehead?
Minehead, yeah.
You want me to pick you a real random one, do you?
Yeah. If you believe in it. Oh, I've got one.
Jim Williams to beat Cameron Menzies.
Okay.
Been a fan of Jim Williams for a while, never really done what I thought he would do. Oh, do you want me to give you a proper curveball?
Yeah, go on.
Proper curveball. King to beat Hetta.
Oh, okay.
Mervyn King, bit of a swan song. Hetta's not been on form. Never underestimate the King.
Right, so you said Jim Williams. Yep, that's an outsider's price. I'm just looking at if they are outsiders according to the odds compilers. And yeah. Kim, yeah, it is. I've got a weird one here then.
Okay.
Razma to beat Ratajski.
Yeah, yeah, I looked at that and I didn't think he was that big an outsider, to be honest. Madders, a mission player, playing well. Christoph, hardly been seen recently. Yeah, I don't even see that as a bit. I see that more as a head-to-head. That I guess Madders is the outsider, but yeah, no, that's an interesting one. As is, you know, James Harrell's played some good stuff this year. Another mission
early on. Early on, he did.
Yeah, they got Danny Noppert.
Harrell or Hurrell?
Hurrell, yeah, Hurrell.
It's like so. I'm doing commentary this week. Remember Moreno Michaels?
Yes.
Yeah, he's on this week. And then I was saying earlier, like, is it Moreno Michaels? Is it Moreno Michels? Is it Moreno Michels? Because he's called all sorts of different things.
Eminem. It's got to be Eminem.
Yeah. Missing out there, isn't he?
He is, really. Anyway, Jan Dekker's not been in touch after last week's podcast, which is disappointing. I thought he was going to give me some financial advice.
Are you telling me Jan Dekker does not listen to the Mission podcast?
Let's talk a bit more about how we jumped onto the players there, which is going on this week, without really finishing our take on the Grand Slam, which I thought was phenomenal, by the way. And something that I've talked about all day, not all day, but today with a few people at work, about Littler was actually lucky. They're like, what? What are you talking about? He was like, unbelievable. He was like, unbeatable. I was like, oh, really? Well, Mike Dedeker had a dart to beat him, for starters. Did Gary Anderson have a dart in the end or not? I don't think
he messed up his chance. So Gary Anderson, he wanted something like 160 something, left 106, and then hit a little one. Now
he did.
That makes a difference. Where you miss a shot makes a difference. You'll probably testify for this as a player. If there's people listening along who are not players, here's another bit of insight for you. Where the opponent misses matters. So if he'd have gone treble 20, the crowd would have gone, whoa, he hit big six, whoa. And then he's got a dart at tops that in your moment is just 50-50. It's hit or miss. And you've got to wait until that dart hits the board, get the reaction, and then you can go and take your shot. When he misses with dart one and you know he can't take it no more, you're like, right, brilliant. And you can start preparing 10 seconds earlier. You don't go through the adrenaline spike. You don't go through the emotion, and you can remove the emotion from the situation and get to the board quicker.
So I have a question for you then.
Yeah.
I've got 104 left. Should I be starting on 20s or 19s?
You're going to suggest going to the 19s for the fact of if you miss, which I think is important at certain levels.
And that, so, see, you're answering my three-part question. I've only asked part one. Right, part one, Matt, as a professional player, where are you starting 104?
18s.
Okay, treble, single, double, 60.
Yeah.
Okay. There's an argument. I've seen people now starting on 16s, four 16s for tops.
Same reason for your 19s as well.
So where do you think professional players should be starting? One of those, 18s or 16s?
I think for a professional player, you should be starting on the route that takes you to the double you want to go for. So and I want to be double 16.
I was going to say Gary Anderson loves double 12, hence why he would be starting on 20s. Yeah.
I love double 16. So if I think there's a route there, which there is, treble and single, it doesn't matter what way you go, you need a treble and a single. So if there's treble and single to leave me my favorite, I'm going to go that way. When you go down and you're not maybe at professional standard or an international standard,
so that's
maybe
my next question.
Locally,
at what level should players be thinking the 19s is a better, and we need to explain it, the 19s is a better option because if I hit the single 7 or the single 3, I can still, I've still got a chance. You know, if I throw a wild one.
It's the same with the 16s, 8 and 7.
Yeah. And so at what level should players, you know, I've always, it was always taught, wasn't it? 46 left, you go for 10 or 6. Because they both leave good doubles and they're right next to each other, so you can't miss the single. But that's at lower level. You wouldn't tell a professional player to do that. You'd say, go for whatever single leaves the double you want. So what sort of level are we talking here, Matt?
When you no longer fear missing. Because the reason you're suggesting go that way is to give you a bigger target because of the fear of missing the single. When you can hit a single number confidently under pressure, almost expected, like 99 out of 100, you'll slip it at once, but 99 out of 100, when you're at that level that you believe it doesn't matter that the target's not big, 14's big enough for me, I'll hit 14 double 16 no problem. When you're at that point, that's when you can go the way you want.
So here's my avid darts fan coming at you, darts commentator. And I hear this so many times. He's got 100, doesn't matter what it is. It's a bull finish. Let's say it's 170. And he goes for the bull. It's two treble 20s. He goes for the bull. The other guy's on 200 and some, doesn't matter. Can't finish. And then he comes back and he misses the 25 he's got left with three darts. And the commentator's go, oh, he should have set it up. He shouldn't have gone for the bull. He should have hit single 10 and left tops his favorite or single 18. Funnily enough, they never say that when they hit the bull. So what's your take on that? If you've got 170, Matt, and I'm on 260, which is highly likely, and you hit two treble 20s, what are you doing with that third dart?
Personally, I set it up.
Right.
I set it up.
Crowd all go boo.
Yeah, but personally, I set it up. However, it's like the switch, isn't it? If you want double 9 and you go 2 double 8, for example, you're going 2 double 8. Now, the second you go for the big two, you have guaranteed yourself two darts at the double. However, if you go for the double 9, you should still get two darts at the double. You'll get one at the double 9, one, and you come inside and miss it, you don't get the last one, or you come inside, you go 1 double 4. So you'll get two darts at the double. you might get three. So again, interesting that you're guaranteeing yourself two, but you get two, you might get three, put just on a not as preferred target. So then my argument to you is, why do you have a target that is so unpreferred to you on a dartboard of 20 segments? Why can't you get it to the point where you're confident enough to have the possibility of having three darts rather than guaranteeing yourself the two
and burning it up? So, and I know, I think we have discussed this or similar previously, and I'm one that would always go for it. And the reason for that, again, I think the last conversation we had is about, why do people go for finishes but then not finish them? So like they've got 161, so they go treble 20, woo, treble 17, woo, single 10. So, and I think we talked about, why would you even go that way? You might as well just stay on two treble 20s. So I was a believer, and it's good that we do have different opinions on this. I was the believer that I'm that used to, in my practice, finishing those off. In practice, I would never practice treble, treble, set it up. Treble, treble, set it up. I would always go treble, treble, bullseye. That's my practice. So therefore, if that situation comes up in a game, I'm far more comfortable doing what I do in practice than changing and trying to do something else. And that, so that's my take on it. So that's why I always go for it. Now, it used to be seen as, oh, that's bad etiquette. You can't go for the bull if the other guy is not on a finish, but we're past that now.
Oh yeah. And I think I said before, especially 161, like the breakdown's better on the 17s and the 20s. Like 101 with two darts, a single 17 leaves 84, back up to the 20s, potentially 64 or 28. So my corridors are better. So yeah, sometimes
but you do see people on like say 164. So they'll go two treble 19s and then they'll still hit a single 10. Yeah. You're like, well, what? You might as well have started on the 20s. It makes no sense at all. It makes no sense. But what I was just going to say then is, obviously, what's your take on Luke Littler going 10 double 10 on 30 and, you know, 16 double 10 on 36 and stuff like that. And people will go, well, he's winning everything. He's beating everybody. So don't be telling me that what he's doing is wrong. Well, yeah, but guess what? We used to say that about Peter Wright. When he was winning everything, changing his darts every game, it was okay. Everybody was like, who cares what he's doing? He's winning everything. He's not now, is he?
So, well, yeah, there's a couple of things to that. The first thing is he is ridiculously good and he's pulling it off. At the minute, he's pulling it off. Now, the other thing to remember is just because you get a certain result doesn't mean you've done something right. And that is kind of the scenario there. Because just because it worked on that occasion or it has worked on a couple of occasions or whatever doesn't mean it's mathematically the right thing to do. You know, the result shouldn't blur what's right and wrong. It's the same as, you know, like people jumping on Wayne Mardell and they're like, how can Wayne Mardell say that? Because he didn't win it. It's irrelevant what Wayne Mardell won. What he's saying is correct. Ignore who's saying it. What he's saying is correct. And that is kind of the thing. Don't look for those side stories in, is that right? Or there is a mathematical advantage or disadvantage to doing that. And it's a mathematical disadvantage, regardless of the fact he pulls it off or not. Now, that then is just, it's playing percentages. And it's just that thing, isn't it? Like you go to the casino and you get the green ring and like you've got to get the arrow in the green ring. And then you go, well, actually, I'd rather play it on a 33% green, though it goes in, and have 66% risk. He's just playing the percentages. That's all he's doing. It's just that the percentages he's playing are not in his favor, and he's able to play within that green zone as such. So
yeah,
there is a right and a wrong. The result shouldn't dictate. It can't, because he hits it doesn't change the fact that it's not mathematically as good. I
totally agree. Just because he's doing it doesn't make it right, because he's given himself two darts at double instead of three. And I'm sure if he was on 36, if he threw 300 darts at double 18 and counted how many he hit compared to, in effect, 200 darts at double 10 because he's got to hit the single 16 first. You're not telling me he hits more double 10s and double 16s in that scenario, 200 versus 300. That can't, no way, no way. So
as you know, my previous role was a coach, both at academy level for football, working in schools, working as a teacher, many different roles. Now, the big takeaway from this is always personal development, personal maximization. And what we do as people, and I say as people because I'm speaking from personal experience, is we judge ourselves against the world to find ourselves our judgment of success or failure, not what we're personally capable of. Now, Phil Taylor, the greatest player of all time, was he the best counter in the world? No. Was there things that he could do to improve his game? I think 100% he could have improved in game. Now, what we do is we go, he's the greatest player that ever lived. He won 16 world titles. However, that's judging him against everybody else's standards. Against his standard, did he hit peak performance? I think there was more in there. He could have been an 18-time world champion, a 20-time world champion. But because he had so much success, we look at that and go, greatest, oh, wow. But could he have gone even further? Could he have won more? Could he have done even better? Scarily, I think he could have, because he was that good with faults.
Yeah, I think he could have. And I think this will rear its head at the point, because he's not going to stop doing it. He's young, he's arrogant, and there's nothing wrong with that. But he's not going to stop doing it.
I want to focus on that for a second, because you say he's arrogant, and people will see that as a put down. I think he's arrogant as well, and I love it, and I think he's right, and you need it. No, it's a solo sport.
Yeah.
You need to go up there and have swagger, be arrogant, and be – it's a one versus one, unopposed practice.
How many times have you heard commentators say, oh, he looks beat. That's his swagger's gone. You know, I don't mean Luke Littler. I mean any player, oh, he looks beaten now. Looks a bit, yes, yeah, his demeanor, it's his body language, he's lost his swagger. We talked about Ricky Evans earlier. He's a perfect example. When everything's going right for Ricky and he's dancing and he's smiling and it's like, you know, and whoa, look at that, another big finish I've hit. And then I've seen him when literally his head's down and he's like, nothing will go in and I can't hit anything. And if I was playing in them, I'd be like, right, you're beat. You wait
till Lakeside. I guarantee if I play like I've been practicing for the last couple of weeks now, the trousers will be off around the head, keys will be flying, coins and stuff, shirts coming up Hulk Hogan style. Oh,
no. Colin Lloyd style.
Hulk Hogan ripping it off. Boards coming off the wall. I'll toe-pump that in the crowd. No. You know, I will be the biggest...
Show off.
Yeah, we'll go with that word, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're
If I get a run going there, my word, I'll be.
What I was going to say is this: he will continue with this because he's arrogant and he thinks this is the right thing to do. And I'm so good at double 10 that I can do anything I want. He's going to start missing. That will come, and at that point, you watch the commentators, and you'll be one of them, and you'll jump all over him for, well, we always said this is a stupid way to go. He's wasting the dart, blah, 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 blah. And everybody will jump all over him until he changes, and then he stops doing it, which will be a shame because, like you say, the arrogance of doing that is like, I don't need three darts to hit a double against you. I can beat you with two. And that gets under your skin. Like half of me says if I was playing him, I want him to go for the single 16. I want him to only have two darts at double 10. And then I want him to miss because it's just going to give me the biggest buzz when I hit mine and go, oh, that'll teach you. Unfortunately, he doesn't miss.
I'm going to go back to the coaching analogies again here for a moment. We're going to go deep again. So when you look at somebody and you're looking at the developing them or working with them, first thing you've got to do is understand them. And what makes them tick? What makes them good? Because what you can't do is you can't go and try and get what someone who's been successful and try and mold yourself on what made them successful. You mentioned Ricky Evans, for example. You can't go, well, actually, this player plays really slow and steady and methodical and sights the dart. So what we need to get Ricky Evans. We need to calm him down. We need to slow him down. We need to, because that's trying to mold in someone else's footsteps. And it doesn't, you can't do that. What you got to do is go, that's what makes Ricky, Ricky. How can we now use that and progress it? I'm going to use an example of a good friend of mine, actually. Glenn Durrant. Now, when we look at Glenn, when he was winning the Premier League, when he was getting deep runs in TV events, he had 98% of darts mastered. He was, for a period of time, arguably the best player in the world.
Oh, I agree.
And what did Glenn do? He focused on the fact that he's losing the semi-finals or the quarterfinals, and he goes, what's the 2% I'm missing? And he focused on the 2% he was missing and stopped developing what made him him. If you remember, he came off social media for a period. Glenn loves social media. He loves a wind-up. He loves the banter. And he took that and tried to become more. So he looked at, right, what's Van Gerwen doing? What's this player doing? What's Gerwen Price doing? What do I need to do to be them? And he tried to use their characteristic. He tried to take things in. And ultimately, that 98% of things that you're doing right, because you're focusing on the 2% you're not, rather than developing the 98, that 98 becomes 96, becomes 94. Then, psychologically, you know you're not playing as good as you was. I've dropped 4%. What do I need? So then you focus on the 4% you've lost, which ultimately you lose even further. So that's why I think mentorship is so, so important, but mentorship that understands the individual they're working with. When we started working together, we are two very similar personalities. And we said, look, one thing we can't do, if we're going to talk about something, we can't do it on text, because text is so to the point and so snappy that we'll end up just going at each other. It's like, if we need to debate something, voice note it or phone call, because we're not going to get on by text. It doesn't work. No, like, text is fine until we need to debate or discuss something.
I
don't do that with anybody else, but because we're so, and it's knowing who you're talking to and dealing with to know how to approach that in a different way.
Really interesting you said that, and something that came to mind was Stephen Bunting, if you remember, because everyone said, you can't win, you're not going to win anything with them 12 grand darts. They've got to go. You know, if he's moved to a big company now, and right, we'll make you some darts, and get rid of. He'd already won the world championship, the BDO world championship. He'd already proved what a player he was. And then they went, you can't play with them. Nobody can play with 12. Nobody's ever played with 12 gram darts. Get rid of them. Let's get some 18 grammers. We'll make them the shape that you want. This disappeared. Disappeared for about 2 years. Then came back with his original darts again, played really well again, won some tournaments again, then changed again. And this sort of went on and on until, thankfully, I think we've come out the other side of that with Stephen Bunting now, and he's found a set that he's happy with. But it was kind of too dramatic. I'll give you another example. Wes Newton. You're old enough yet to remember when Wes was winning every other Pro Tour. I mean, it's unbelievable.
He was on the tour the same time as Wes, yeah.
Oh, Premier League player, and just in Pro Tours was one of the most prolific Pro Tour players. And everyone said to him, you can't keep winning when you stood so far to the right. You stood so far. I mean, he stands further right than Bunting. You can't keep winning. Everything's to cock. You're not in line. Move back. You need to move back to the middle. Now, Wes had played like that for 20 years. Move to the middle. Next minute, he's gone.
Yeah.
And by that time, by the time he moved back to where he originally used to stand, it was too late. He messed his game up big time. And that kind of is this same sort of analogy to what you're saying there. You know, sometimes it's a bit like Jim Furyk. I always use golf, but it's a bit like Jim Furyk at golf. Had the worst swing you've ever seen, but multiple major winner because he'd found a way to do it. If his coach had come in on day one and go, you can't play like that. You can't play like that. That's got to go. We got to start again. We'd have probably never heard of him. But because his coach went, oh, I see. Right, okay, you've got to where you are doing that. So there has to be something right. Let's work with what's good.
Yeah, exactly. Focus on what's working and go with that. And that's the thing as well, though, where you need that person you trust. Because I'm speaking to two players at the moment. both in different codes and organizations. So they know I'm not talking to their opponents as well. Like, and that's important. Like, yeah. you've got to work with one person in an organization. So trust the person. Don't listen to your opponents, because as much as they might be your friends, they're also wolf in sheep's clothing. And do you know what really comes to mind? Barneveld stood practicing, right? And Taylor comes up to me and goes, "Oh, good to see you've stopped doing that thing where you throw."
It's like, "Oh, yeah.
What thing with my throat? Like, what was I doing?" Like, and instantly gets him thinking about it. And then Barneveld, Taylor goes and hammers him.
That's typical Taylor. That's Taylor Bristow-esque, isn't it? That is, yeah. Do you hold your breath? Do you breathe in or do you breathe out when you throw a dart? It's like, I don't know. I haven't thought about that. Now I'm thinking about it now. Yeah, no.
Love them.
Yeah, the old ones are the best.
So you've got to be very careful with who you listen to advice from as well.
I almost forgot we had an apology to make. And it's just come to mind now, so I must get it in, Matt, that we did say last week you were the only mission player in Lakeside, the only mission male player, and we forgot Dennis Nielsen, who, of course, that was last year's semi-finalist. So I don't quite know how we forgot Dennis, such a lovely, likeable guy, World Cup player, met the guy, brilliant dart player, very good friend of Oscar Lukusiak, whose darts we've just released. So sorry, Dennis, if you're listening and watching, apologies, you slipped under my radar there, so I'll take the flak for that, but good luck and I hope you meet Matt in the final. There you go.
Smash him up. Smash
him up. Well, I'll tell you what,
is he the strong guy?
Yes, Dennis, he was in the world's strongest man, so please let me be there for when you smash him up. Oh my goodness me.
I'll outlift him as well, you know. I'm not saying world's strongest man strength, but I'm deceptively got some power in there, you know, when I've got to strap my wrists up and things now, but I tell you what, I've deceptively got something in there.
Yeah.
For a fat lad. Well, not as fat lad anyway, no way. Not as fat lad.
Matt, I've got some comments. You know, listen.
Well, why not? That's what we're here for.
Might be a question in there. Let's have a look. Okay. Oh, all right. Okay. So this is Dart Hopper 7874. If there is such a thing as an available dart throwing machine, so a throw could easily be replicated, I'd be interested in a video of it throwing the same dart with different thicknesses of shapes of flights. This is in reply to our video that we did on the different microns. Okay. Which if you haven't watched, guys, please watch it all the way through to the end, because it goes a bit mad at the end. So I don't know of one. I've seen golf robots. I've never seen a darts robot. Have you?
I can tell you, and I've probably still got the emails. I got contacted from a university in Sweden to go over,
okay,
who was looking to develop a dart throwing robot to work in parallel with my YouTube channel to get 100% scientific data in regards to speeding of darts, the shapes of flight stems, and to get actual recorded data. However, after months and months and months of trying to perfect this dart throwing robot, they could never get the robot to replicate the throw every single time exactly the same. It just wasn't possible, because
they weren't trying to get it to replicate your throw, were they? Because that would be impossible.
No, yeah. they even tried almost like a catapulty type of way, but even that was coming up with readings that was the readings could never be replicated, which was really interesting. They could never get it over the same distance to replicate time and time again, so they couldn't get it to change equipment because they couldn't get it with the same equipment, and they tried it for months. So
we was gonna
do content together that would have been the most in-depth research that would be evergreen, stand the test of time, the gold standard of this is your equipment content. You don't need to go anywhere else. This is it. And we couldn't get it.
So there you go. Would you? It just shows that you can ask us any question you want, and the chances are Matt's got an answer or I've got an answer. One of us has been there and done it. You might think we're making it up, but trust me, we're not. We've been in a lot of places. Right. Warrior has said it's X.
Was that Wes Newton?
Yeah, well, it could well be, couldn't it, as we've just spoken about him. But he is talking about the venue from Rate My Hockey in Plymouth, which was
Brunel Venue.
Yeah, with Legends Bar, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He's put, it's such a great venue. The only thing that lets Plymouth down on the darts is we don't have a dedicated dart store anymore, and we need one. Now, I thought we should reply to that, because when we were at Brunel View, they were on about setting one up, weren't they?
There was.
In store. So if you do go down there to play, speak to the guys there. I'm pretty sure they've got an account with us. They're, you know, if the stuff that you want to get, I'm pretty sure that they were so keen on changing things and making things better. And any suggestions, get down there and suggest they open a little dart shop in there.
They was looking at doing a dart shop, wasn't they? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's an interesting one for Plymouth. And glad that you like the venue. Glad that you've seen the Rate My Hockeys. I've got a question, a bit more for me, really, but it's Emmanuel7215 has said, please, please, can you release some more players' shirts? I would love to buy Richie Edhouse and Madders. He doesn't mention you. I would love to buy Richie Edhouse and Madders Rasmus.
I've got some available.
Said two of my favourite players. But those shirts aren't available to the public. And he's right, they're not. And I'll tell you for why. So the problem with shirts is, as I'm sure you'll all be aware, is how many sizes we have to produce. So if you go down your local Next or other clothing retailer, you might have medium, large, XL. If you're lucky, there's a 2XL. So that's why they can afford to stock stuff. In darts, we do everything from small to 5XL. That's small, medium, large, and then five other sizes. So there are 8 sizes per shirt. Now, as you can imagine, you buy a Madders Rasmus shirt, you've got no idea who's going to buy them. So you bring 100 in of each size, or whatever it is, doesn't matter. Let's use 100. You sell 90 of the XL, you sell 90 of the 2XL, you sell one of the 3XL. So what happens then is you're left with 99 Madders Rasmus shirts in 3XL that for whatever reason nobody wants. And this is why stocking players' shirts is a very difficult, you know, it's supply and demand, and it's a very, very difficult thing to do because of that reason.
I struggled. I can vouch for this because I've always sort of done my own shirts and things. And like large and medium, large and extra large, sorry, would always fly out. But then I'd get someone come and go, I want a large. I don't have a large left, but I've got 50 mediums, I've got 52 XLs, but larger XL had gone. So then they're like, oh, well, they're no good for me. So they don't get the shirt. And then you're like, well, do I order more of those? But then if I order more of those, then I've still got all these other ones to go. And yeah, so it gets quite tricky because you've got to get the person that's interested at the size that's available.
It's the same reason why we don't do tungsten darts in 10 different weights. You know, it's the reason why don't you do a Matt Edgar dart in everything from 21 through to 30 gram. Therefore, whatever weight I use, I can choose that. It's the same thing again. You'd be left with a certain weight, might be 27 or 24. It could be anything where you're left with the weights of that dart because everybody wanted the other ones.
And the other thing I'm going to say here as well, because it is a business and profit is not a naughty word, that with that, what you'll end up doing is you spend all your profit that you've made on the dart that does sell in buying the dart that doesn't sell at the weight. So you've just sidestepped. You've not actually progressed as a company or as a business.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that I thought that was well worth answering that question. So I'm glad we did. So, Matthew, I want you to give me two names. We are recording this on the Monday. Players Champs starts on Friday, finishes on Sunday. I want you to give me the name of a, shall we say, one of the favourites who you think will do well. And I want you to give me one name of an outsider that you think will do well.
I think Luke Humphreys bounces back. And I think he comes out swinging. I'm going to check this because I don't know what's classed as an outsider these days. That's the problem. So I'm just going to look at the odds quickly.
Okay, so rather than the odds, if I said to you somebody outside of the world's top 20.
Okay. I'm going to go with... I tell you what. At 80-1. You won't be far wrong having a look at James Wade.
Ooh. That's interesting.
I think that's far too big.
All right, then. So over this fast format, which it is, does it get in later rounds? Do the legs go?
Yeah, it's six, I think, for the first two rounds.
Okay. I'm going to go Gary Anderson.
Yeah.
And my outsider... is Wessel Nyman.
Oh, that's a good shout, yeah. I don't think this is a tournament that's going to suit Gary, though. I think if Gary's going to win something, it's going to be a week-long event like the match play or something long like the Worlds.
I think the longer, the more stamina, the older you are, the harder it is. So I actually thought with this being a shorter tournament might suit him. Look how well he's been doing on the Pro Tour.
Here's the schedule. One game Friday, game Saturday afternoon, game Saturday night, game Sunday afternoon, game Sunday night, another game Sunday night.
Yeah,
it gets long format and there's not long gaps between. And it's that awkward bit, like, what do I go do? Do I go practice? Do I go rest? The roller coaster, the highs and the lows. It's so hard, so hard. I know from my runs I've had at the UK Open how hard it is. So, and this is even more intense. So,
the only place I ran to at the UK Open was to get something to eat. I was out first round.
The toilet, so you didn't wet yourself. If you're not aware of the story, Andy Cornwall likes a visit to the toilet, to the lavatory.
Used to. You keep bringing it up, but it's used to now. You're the one now. You're the one. You know
it's
that's
mad,
true.
Isn't it? Like, if you were to say, what's one thing you learned of working with Matt this year that I had a problem I need to go see the doctor about because he started ripping me that I was going to the toilet all the time. So that's I checked it out.
So I did, and he said, you might be allergic to lactose. And I was like, what? I've been drinking milk all my life. Don't talk nonsense. He went, well, I'm telling you to try lactose-free milk. I did. Never felt better. No tummy problems or anything. Not going to the toilet anymore is the weirdest thing. And do you know what? Lactose-free milk tastes the same. I don't know what the lactose does. It tastes the same. I cannot taste any different. I'm having it on cereal, coffee, everything. I don't quite know how we got milk into the Darts podcast, but, you know.
We can get anything in.
We do get anything in. But I think that's been another good week, Matt. We're at 53 minutes, and it feels like we've only just turned it on.
Wow, that's because time flies when you're having fun.
It does. And we have been having fun. I hope you've been enjoying the Monday videos, the Wednesday follow-ups to Rate My Hockey, which are going to change to shops very soon. Fridays, we tend to stick a little short out for you, mission short. And Sundays, you get the podcast. It's a whole week of me and you, Matt.
No better way to spend a week, eh? Entertainment at its finest.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your company again. That sounded very formal, didn't it? Thank you very much for coming, Mr. Edgar. Yeah, it's very nice to see you. Well, you have nicely fallen asleep on the couch this week. You're almost sat upright for the whole of the, you know, we've not had any technical difficulties. The microphones seem to be working. So maybe we're getting good at this.
I won't go that far.
Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit subscribe. We've got loads of new subscribers this week. We want you to be one as well. So hit the subscribe button and we'll be back with you next week.